जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जन यशोदनन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यशोदनन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यमुना तीरवनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जन सुरनन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यशोदनन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यमुना तीरवनचारी मनचारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जन माधव जीवनदारी। गोपी जन माधव जीवनदारी। नन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यशोदनन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यमुना तीरवनचारी। यमुना तीरवनचारी।
Paramahansa Parvajakacharya, Satarasata Sri Srimad His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON BBT Founder, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga, glory to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this morning, from Srimad Bhagavatam is from the fifth canto, chapter 20, and we're doing verses, text 24 through 28. So I'll read the Sanskrit and the English translation for the first three. Evam purastat shuridat parita upavishita sakad vidbo dvatri smal lakshay yojana yamaha Samanena cha dadi mandodena parito yasmin sako nama mahiroha sva shetra yape de sako yasyaha maha surabi gandastam dvipam anuvasyati. The translation: outside the ocean of milk is another island, Sakadvip, which has a width of 3,200,000 yojanas, which is 25,600,000 miles. As Krauna Chadvip is surrounded by its own ocean of milk, Shakadvip is surrounded by an ocean of churned yogurt as broad as the island itself. In Shakadvip, there is a big shaka tree from which the island takes its name. This tree is very fragrant. Indeed, it lends its scent to the entire island. Text 25. Tasyapi prayavrata eva dipatir namna medatiti sopi vibhaja saptavarshani putra nama teshu svatmajan purojava manojava pavamana durmanika chitra repa bahurupa Vishvadara Samgyan Nida Yadi Patin Svayam Bhagavat Yananta Evasita Matis Tapovanam Pravi Vesha. The translation, text 25. The master of the island, also one of the sons of Priyavrata, was known as Medatiti. He also divided his island into seven sections, named according to the names of his own sons, whom he made the kings of that island. The name of those sons are Purojava, Manojava, Pavamana, Dumranika, Chitrarepa, Babarupa, and Vishvadara. After dividing the island and situating his sons as its rulers, Medatiti personally retired, and to fix his mind completely upon the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he entered a forest suitable for meditation. Text 26. Etasham varsha maryada girayo nadyascha sapta saptaiva ishana purush shringo balabhadra sakta sharaha Sahasra Sroto Devapalo Mahanasa Iti Anaga Yurda Ubayas Pristir Aparajita Panchapadi Sahasra Srutir Nijadritir Iti. The translation:
text 26. For these lands also there are seven boundary mountains and seven rivers. The mountains are Ishana, Urushringa, Balabhadra, Saktakshira, Sahasra Srota, Devapala, and Mahanasa. The rivers are Anaga, Ayurda, Ubayaspristi, Aparajita, Panchapadi, Sahasrasruti, and Nijadriti. Text 27. Tadvarsha Purusha Ritavrata Satyavrata Dhanavritana Nuvrata Namano Bhagavantam Vayu Atmakam Pranayama Viduta Rajas Tamasa Parama Samadina Yajante. The translation. The inhabitants of those islands are also divided into four castes, Ritivrata, Satyavrata, Dhanavrata, and Anuvrata, which exactly resemble Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Sudra. They practice pranayama and mystic yoga, and in trance they worship the Supreme Lord in the form of Vayu. And that brings us to text 28, which is on the board. Antaha pravishya bhutani yo bibarti atma ketubi antaryamishvara sakshat patu no yad vases putam. So we'll chant it together. Anta pravishya bhutani yo bibarti atma ketubi antaryamishvara sakshat Patu no yad vases putam Anta pravishya bhutani Yo bibartyatma ketubi Antayamishvar sakshat Patu no yad vases putam. Anyone? Anta pravishya bhutani yo bibartyatma ketubi patu no yad vases putam. Anta pravishya bhutani yo bibartyatma ketubi
ladies.
Anta pravishya bhutani yo bibhajatma ketubi antayamishvar sakshat patu no yad vases putam Anta pravishya bhutani yo bibhartatma ketubi antayamasvar sakshat patu no yabhases putam anta pravishya. Entering within bhutani, all living entities. Yaha, who, bibarti, maintains, atmaketubhi, by the functions of the inner airs, prana, apana, etc. Antaryami, the super soul within. Ishvaraha, the supreme person. Sakshat, directly. Patu, please maintain. Naha, us. Yat Vase, under whose control? Sputam, the cosmic manifestation. Translation. The inhabitants of Sakadrip worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Vayu in the following words. That's in parentheses. O Supreme Person, situated as the Supersoul within the body, you direct the various actions of the different airs, such as prana, and thus you maintain all living entities. O Lord, O Supersoul of everyone, O Controller of the cosmic manifestation under whom everything exists, may you protect us from all dangers. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Through the mystic yoga practice called pranayama, the yogi controls the airs within the body to maintain the body in a healthy condition. In this way, the yogi comes to the point of trance and tries to see the super soul within the core of the heart. Pranayama is the means to attain samadhi, trance, in order to fully absorb oneself in seeing the Supreme Lord as Antaryami, the Supersoul within the core of the heart. You can repeat the translation. The inhabitants of Sakadvip worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Vayu. In the following words, O Supreme Person, situated as the Supersoul within the body, you direct the various actions of the different airs, such as prana, and thus you maintain all living entities. O Lord, O Supersoul of everyone, O Controller of the cosmic manifestation, under whom everything exists, may you protect us from all dangers. Oma gina timirandasya gananjana salakaya chaksur lanmilitam jena tasmai sri gurave namaha. Sri Chaitanya, Manobhistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Svaya Rupakadamayam Datati Spa Patandikam Panchakopa Turubhischa Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So I started with verse 24, leading up to this verse 28, and of course it was describing the length and breadth of different planetary systems and different oceans. And these verses and this part of Srimad Bhagavatam, the fifth canto, is I find very, very interesting in many ways. I was with Srila Prabhupada when he was translating this part of Srimad Bhagavatam, fifth canto. This was going on in 1975. You know, it's a very wonderful thing when you can put time, person, places to what is going on here in Srimad Bhagavatam and what Srila Prabhupada was doing. Because at this time, 1975, maybe the classes in the temple room might be from second canto, first canto, third canto. But obviously, 1975, he's translating the fifth canto. So we're not doing classes on fifth canto. Huh? This is not going on. But when you're with Prabhupada
24 hours a day, you got to see everything was connected. It wasn't, you know, in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning. This is what he's doing. He's translating, you know, at this time. It might be a Tuesday morning, Srila Prabhupada, he's translating this. And then 4 hours later, he's on the morning walk. And what is he doing? He's discussing what he was translating. Not all the time, but especially during this period, because these were very controversial, we could say, to the materialist, to his young Western disciples. When Prabhupada started translating in the fifth canto, talking about the universes, the distances, the different planetary systems, and of course it always went back to the moon, this created a lot of controversy and sometimes difficulty for disciples to accept. I wanted to read one thing. This is from my book, What is the Difficulty? And I actually wrote this in... I was writing this in 2005, and at the time I was in Rishikesh, up above Rishikesh, staying for a month. And I was completing these different stories about Srila Prabhupada. So somehow that particular day, which was almost 10 years to the day, maybe in a few weeks, I wrote while in Perth. So this is where Prabhupada was translating, this very spot, this area of Srimad Bhagavatam. He was in Perth, Australia in May of 1975. And he was there. Supposedly he was there regaining his health. This was always one of the things. Perth, Australia was, I mentioned, I think in last class, was a vacation town. It was right by the beach on the west coast of Australia. Very nice city, ocean city. And Prabhupada was staying at the house. One brahmachari, his parents, let him stay in the house. So it was just a small vacation cottage. And Prabhupada doing this every day, sometimes 5 o'clock in the morning, which was also rare, he would ring the bell and he would call us into his room, Paramahamsa and myself, because of what he was translating. So this day, I say, Prabhupada engaged his disciple in many lively conversations during the morning walks. He's translating this area and he would have what we call mock debates. You know, Prabhupada would sometimes question his disciples, and he would say, he would want you to be, we say in English, the devil's advocate. So he would want you to present the materialists. What do they say? This is often what do they say? I said, I would sometimes get involved, but usually I would let Paramahamsa Swami, who was his secretary, and he was a little more adept at it. I was always afraid to get involved with these things with Prabhupada because I didn't feel qualified and I was afraid of saying the wrong thing. Because sometimes you could, in your idea, assume the position as devil advocate and present him materialistic arguments. Huh? You may think, well, I don't subscribe to these arguments. I'm just saying it for Prabhupada to help serve him. But sometimes he would look at you as if you were the doubter. You know. One time a devotee said, you know, Prabhupada, they say Bhagavad Gita, it was written within 2,000 years. And this is, they like to say that in the Christian world. The Bhagavad Gita is not 5,000 years, it goes back less than 2,000 years. That way it's inside the Christian philosophy. So one devotee once said that to Prabhupada on a morning walk. Prabhupada, they say, and Prabhupada looked at him, well, why do you think like that? You know, then immediately you would just, what could you say next? No, I don't think that, Prabhupada. Then why are you saying it? You know, so sometimes when we talk, we were raising our doubts, huh? What we were thinking in the forum. So he could read through these things. I said, sometimes he would call us into his room and discuss the Vedic cosmology. One day he's told us that different planetary orbits were all independent and that the so-called law of gravity was not mentioned in the Vedas. Once Paramahamsa Swami asked him, How is it the sun is always shining somewhere on the Earth planet if it's going behind Sumeru Mountain? Wouldn't it be dark on the entire planet? Prabhupada was silent. And then he said, we're not so interested in these details. The Bhagavatam is just a very short summary to give some idea of the creation of the Lord. But it's not scientific. We're not interested in science. We're interested in developing love of God. It was evident, I say, Prabhupada didn't want us to become sidetracked from the goal. He worked nonstop to teach us. He continued, he said, if this were to be scientific, it would take volumes to explore how the creation is done. But this was not Sukadev Goswami's purpose in speaking, to explain very scientifically the creation. He just wants us to understand Krishna has created everything. Develop love of Krishna, that's all. If you can't understand it, you accept it because it's there in the scriptures. We don't bother our minds trying to understand how it could be like this. It seems difficult, but we're not concerned. We just want to develop love of God. Actually, I'm not giving any more information, simply what is there. I'm not an astronomer, so I may not understand all the details. These details are given in another part of the Vedas. Sukadev Goswami is giving some basic summary ideas of the universal operation. So this is what he was telling us at this time. Because for us Westerners, who grew up in hearing within the schools from the time you went to grade school through high school and college, you were delivered a certain understanding about the universe. So Prabhupada's saying our business was to develop love of God. But he would bring us in daily, and on the morning walks he would have these debates with the different disciples that were there. And at that time, of course, then also the moon came up. So now again, this was a very big subject and created devotees left. There were devotees that just could not accept. Because Prabhupada would say, we definitely did not. He said, I said so many times we have not gone to the moon. He said, maybe, he would say different things. Sometimes maybe some other planet. He said, but not the moon. He said, it is not possible. Then when he was translating in the fifth canto, he would say, too far away. So this is going on day after day. And for me, those of you who know me or have heard me over time here, you know, I'm not, philosophy for me is not such an easy thing. I just appreciated Prabhupada very much, seeing what he did, his presence, his chanting, everything. Could see he was pure devotee. So whatever he said, I accepted. And this is what Prabhupada did. And this is what he was describing here. His evidence was Shastra. Once he read it in Shastra, that was it. Didn't want to hear anything else from outside sources. Because he would say, what is the foundation? The materialist, what is their foundation? I'm this body. So everything, he would say, you put on top of that, it's not useful. Because their very foundation is they're thinking, I'm this body. Our foundation is we're spirit soul. So as I said, Perth, it was a nice little vacation home. There's, in the back, they had a backyard. In British Commonwealth, they would say garden. The garden in the rear had a swimming pool, an in-ground swimming pool. And when the weather was nice, I would give Prabhupada massage right next to the pool. And then he would go into the pool for his bath. He turned it into a nice bathing ghat there, and a nice kund. So he was doing this every day, give Prabhupada massage and the sun shining. Then he would bathe in the pool. So the one day, I'm giving him massage, it's just the two of us are there. Now you remember this environment. Every day Prabhupada's talking about these planets. every day he's seeing and hearing from his disciples. And he's thinking, what are these people going to do? How are they going to accept? As he said, we accept our interest as love of God. So I'm rubbing his back. Prabhupada always talked to me during massage while I was behind him. I can never remember me being in front of him and him having a conversation. Half of the massage was behind him, so I guess you could say it was a 50-50 chance. But it always seemed like I was behind him, so he wasn't looking directly at me. So I'm rubbing, and he says, so we have to understand, we accept. The Shastra is our mother. He goes, so we accept the Shastra. He says, do you agree? Now, what are you going to say? He said, no, I don't agree with that. I said, yes, Prabhupada, that was an easy question. So I'm very happy rubbing, and I got the answer, yes. You know, that's what you want to do. Disciple, we're yes men. Whatever your guru said, yes, Prabhupada, that's correct. So he says that. And then he said, so, what do you say? Shastra's mother says, of course, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You can only know the Father through the Mother. Is that correct? Yes, Prabhupada. Very happy, a very knowledgeable disciple. And then he said, so, what do the scientists say? Oh, now that's, you know, what do the materialists, what do they say? So I'm thinking, okay, he's asking me, what does the materialist say? So I said, I'm thinking, I'm rubbing, and I'm massaging, and I said, well, they would say, you have to accept that your mother is telling the truth. I thought that was a very reasonable answer, right? You know, your mother saying this is your father, you have to accept that. So I put in that little doubt. I said, well, you have to accept your mother is telling the truth. I said the wrong thing. What do you mean? She's your mother, must be the truth. You have to, and then he immediately turns it to the Shastra. You have to accept Shastra. What are you doing here if you don't accept the Shastra? And I thought, what did I do? I was just trying to be the materialist for a minute, you know. He got very angry with me. That you must accept. How can you understand if you don't accept the Shastra? He said, we must have faith in the Shastra. So I'm like, yes, Prabhupada, yes, Prabhupada. He said, never mind. He got angry with me. And then I'm just massaging. I thought, well, I just thought I was trying to engage in this debate. You know, Prabhupada started a debate. I was just doing what everyone else did. And that's why I never did it. I was quiet on the morning. I just held that microphone. Let everybody else talk, get yelled at. Not my business. So I massage a few more minutes. And then he asked the same question again. He said, so, what do they say? Thinking, who is they he's talking about? You know, what do they say? The materialist. Your mother says this is your father. What would they say? And of course, he obviously wanted a different answer. He wanted something, I guess, a little more scientific, a little more philosophical. But I didn't know anything else. And I rubbing and hesitated, and I went and I said the same thing again. Not intelligent, right? Once I already got chastised, and again I said the same thing because it's the only thing I could think of. I guess because that's what was there in my head. That was my doubt. Of course, we have to accept. What's our business reading this? You can read day after day, sit in class day after day, but if you're reading and you have doubts, and what good is all your reading? What good is all your philosophy? So this is what he was saying. What do they say? How do you understand? And I would say, well, you have to believe that it's all, that this is the truth coming from your mother, from the Shastra. Oh, and then he got really angry. So screaming at me. Why are you here, he said, if you don't accept, if you don't have faith? what are you doing here? He said, go. I'm massaging him. He said, go, get. So what's your business here if you don't have faith in the Shastra?
I said, yes, Prabhupada, I have faith in the Shastra.
Yes, he must have faith in the Shastra.
I said, yes, Prabhupada.
All right, he said, I'm finished. I'm not talking anymore. He just shut me down. Told me, be quiet. He said, I'm going to be quiet now. I don't want to talk to you about this anymore. So that was the rest of the massage. He didn't say one word. And I kept thinking, what did I do? I thought I was trying to be devil's advocate. You know, I was just doing what every day so many were doing. They say this and they say that. So that's what I thought I was doing. But anyway, Prabhupada wasn't happy. Not happy with me at all. I then finished massage and he went, bathed in the pool. It was soap, everything. He went into the pool, had a bath. So then the rest of the day went on. Of course, I prepared his lunch. Had lunch. And then he would just move on. You know, it wasn't that anxiety, that frustration, that anger was there. You didn't see it anymore. But it was just something you didn't speak about anymore. So then that was the whole day. So then the nighttime came. What do? I give Prabhupada massage again. So now we're in this little bedroom and it's dimly lit. And then massaging Prabhupada. I'm already not thinking too much about the daytime. These things happened when you were with Prabhupada. It wasn't, you know, there was lots of forms of ecstasy when you were with Prabhupada. Sometimes the ecstasy could take very frightening turns for a disciple. But it was all ecstasy. It was in connection with Prabhupada. So now I'm massaging him. And he said, and very softly, you know, even very soft, it was very calm, very peaceful. Always, as I say, my favorite time of the day with Prabhupada. Because everything else was finished. No discussions with disciples. No translation work. He's getting ready to take rest. He had prasadam hour before. Maybe some puris and subji, had his hot milk. So it was very wonderful. And you're alone, sitting in the room. So he says, so he said, you accept that they never went to the moon? And I never had a problem. I didn't think I had a problem accepting it. As I say, Prabhupada knew us better than we knew ourselves. You know, the spiritual master understands you. Huh? Why? We read in this verse, Krishna is within the heart, a super soul. So all he does is give direction. So this is the business of the spiritual master, the pure devotee, spiritual master. He's always giving you direction. Externally, he's there. Because we're so deaf, we can't hear super soul. And super soul is so kind, Krishna is so kind, he manifests as the spiritual master. And he directly gives you instructions. So now Prabhupada, I'm massaging his legs very calmly. He said, so, it's okay? Yes, Prabhupada, I said, it's okay. He said, I say, never went to the moon? I said, yes, Prabhupada. He said, okay, good. He said, I had a disciple. He said, one servant. One of his first servants, how many of you know, he's had a servant, Purushottam. He said, when I said we didn't go to the moon, he became very upset. He became bewildered, he said. He couldn't accept it. He said, and he left. He was Prabhupada's direct association, Prabhupada's personal servant. Prabhupada said it didn't happen. Prabhupada saw it on the television. He was there. Berry place in his room getting massage just before lunch. He watched it. What his disciple wanted to see it. Prabhupada saw it. He never thought for a minute these people are on the moon. We did because, you know, we believe everything. You know, I said the other day, they say it's easier to lie to people than to convince them that you're lying to them. It's very easily people accept lies. So he saw it. Prabhupada said, I told him, and he left. Then very compassion, so much compassion, he said to me, you're not going to leave, are you? And I said, no, Prabhupada, I'm not going to leave. And he said, thank you. He was concerned. And then I realized what happened earlier in the day. It was, again, it was a continuation. There was a flow. There was continuity. He was understanding me. He was asking me questions. He was testing my faith. Because he would speak, and he knew if I speak the truth, people are going to go away. Some people are going to leave. Huh? And it happens. It happens all the time. But what was his duty? To speak the truth from the Shastra. And as we say, he wasn't concerned of trying to make it palatable to others. You know, Hari Sari, he tells a story when he was with Prabhupada in 1976, and they were in Hawaii. And it just so happened the early editor of Prabhupada's books, Hayagriva, he was also there just at that time. It just so happened. You know, everything is connected. And Prabhupada's sitting in his room and he's reading Easy Journey to Other Planets. Why is that book famous besides speaking about the moon? Why is Easy Journey to Other Planets famous? It was the first book Prabhupada wrote. He says, a friend told him, write books. People never throw books away. Magazines, but you write books. So that was his first small book, Easy Journey to Other Planets. I believe around, I'm not sure what year. So then Prabhupada's in his room. He's reading Easy Journey to Other Planets. And Hari Sari comes into the room, offers obeisances, and Prabhupada said, this very nice book, Prabhupada says, you know this book. And he said, in this book I said we never went to the moon. He said, you've read? And Hari was aware of reading the book, but he didn't remember reading that. But he didn't say anything to Prabhupada. He said, well, I haven't read it for a few years now, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, yes. But as it turned out, that had been edited out of the book. That very spot where Prabhupada said he didn't go to the moon. This was before moon landing, but Prabhupada said it is not possible to go to the moon without proper credentials. Huh? Without the proper spiritual body, one cannot go a heavenly planet to the moon. So that got edited out by his editor. So later, that was brought to Prabhupada's attention. He was so upset. How could you take that out of there? Prabhupada wasn't into watering down things to get bigger audience. He wasn't interested in the bigger, he was interested in presenting the truth, presenting the Shastra. Anyway, he called in his editor and apologized, very sorry, I didn't, you know, I thought that would be a little too controversial for others. So many would have doubts. How can that be there? Anyway, then it was put back in the Prabhupada's Easy Journey to Other Planets. So Prabhupada had, everything was there. He gave us everything, and then he tried to make sure somehow or other we could understand. And as he would say, if you don't understand, then you just move on. Eventually it will come. Realization will come. But until that time, he said, you chant, and what you can accept, you accept. But not that we don't present the philosophy, not that we don't give people the truth. Truth must be there. So this was Prabhupada's business. And he did it all the time. He would give us the truth, absolute truth. When he was sitting there on the Vyasasan, when he was writing, you could be sure he didn't put something in there just to make it palatable to others. As he said, I'm just writing what I'm reading, what I'm translating.
He said, I'm not adding anything. He would sit 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning. He would have his green volume. We called it the green volume. He had his Bhagavatams. He had one volume. It was the black Bhagavatam. And as all it had in it was all the verses from Srimad Bhagavatam in Sanskrit. And that was there on his desk. And then he had the green Bhagavatam. And that was about a dozen volumes. And that had commentaries by the great Acharya Sridhar Swami. So he would read that, and he would read that, had 3 or 4 commentaries. So then he would read through that. And very often you'll see him reference the Acharyas, various Acharyas. You say, Sridhar Swami says this, and this one says this. And then he would bring it all together and give us his commentary. He said very carefully, each word he picked so carefully, to give us the truth, nothing but the truth. We say that in the courts in the USA, swear on the Bible. This is because this was the idea. The Shastra is the truth, all the truth and nothing but the truth. We say, so help me God. This is, we put people under oath. So this is the oath of a devotee, to just deliver the truth. And this is what I appreciated with Prabhupada. I accepted that much I could understand. I may not understand too many things, but I know if he said something, it was true. I accepted that much. He was a pure devotee and he knew the truth. So we just have to come to that platform. Follow his instructions, chant Hare Krishna. Everything will be fine. As Prabhupada said, everything will be all right. Don't worry. Just do that program. You have to cast those doubts away, all the doubts. Just let them go. So I'm going to end here. I'd like to say, after being here for just over 2 months, my wife and I were leaving in a day. A day or two, so it's been very nice to be here with all of you. By the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and their lordships, we consider this our home. So even though we're going, we're just always thinking when to come back, when we can come back. So by your mercy, please allow us to come back, and we'll come back and see you all again. And thank you very much for being your kindness. You're living here in this most wonderful place by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and his followers. So just be happy in this place. And you see, when you sit in Krishna Hall there, you see all those different signs about Vrindavan in particular. Very special place to be able to be here. So we know that. Many of us, we feel that when we're here. Just by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, Srimati Radharani. So we're very, very happy to be here. So if there are any questions, comments about anything at all, we have some time left. Yes, you can take.
Thank you. When I was reading Srila Prabhupada's books, then a lot of things, some things made sense. I thought, yeah, this is, you know, what I was looking for. Because I was looking for the truth. I was very curious about the
when this portion I read to you from my book, I said I was in, actually it was Ramjula, right next to the Ganga, and it was 10 years ago, like I say, almost 10 years ago in a few weeks. And when I was writing that, because I had put all of this down for a long time, all these memories, they were sitting in a box in some pages, loose pages, and I would go through gradually. So I didn't even, at the time when I was with Prabhupada, I didn't put a lot of things together. As I tell now, when Prabhupada would talk to me, I didn't, you know, I very rarely understood he was talking to me. Like my super soul, he was telling me what to do, giving me instructions. So even in the daytime, when that went on, and he was yelling at me, you must accept, why are you here? If you don't have the faith, why are you, he kept saying it to me, what are you doing here? And then even when he talked to me at the nighttime, I didn't put it together that, you know, I'm with him every day, I'm his son, his servant, I'm sitting with him, he's seeing everything I'm doing, he's knowing everything about me. Imagine such a situation. We think we know ourselves so well. Imagine being with the person that knows everything about you. Things you don't even know that happened. Things that your future, he knows where you're headed in the future. And he's trying to guide you. And you're so dull, you don't even see it. You don't even know this is going on. He does it with such finesse, you know, such just wonderful thing. So it was 30 years later, 2005, when I finally started putting things together, and I'm still putting things together. I'm seeing the past with Prabhupada and how he just knew, how he was directing me for then, and how he's still directing me now, and how things he was saying at that time were directions for me even at this time. All these things. But while I was typing furiously on my little laptop all of these realizations, which I felt they were big realizations for me, and as I'm typing, and I'm sitting, as you did, because you're just in a single room with the bed on there, so I'm sitting on the bed, my pillow behind me, and I'm typing away, and the whole bed's shaking. And, you know, it was a construction zone, so I'm thinking, boy, something's really going on. And I'm typing and I just feel this vibration. It just went on and on and on. So I found out, like 10 minutes later, there was an earthquake. If you remember, those who remember back 10 years ago, there was also a big earthquake. What area? Same kind of area around Nepal, but not in Nepal, but very big, big earthquake. So that's what was happening while I was typing on this computer, my Prabhupada story and my realizations. And I was thinking, wow, that was like a big wake up. Like Prabhupada was shaking me, you know, Prabhupada was shaking me to wake up. And this is what he's doing all the time, every day. You read from Prabhupada's books, you hear from Prabhupada in classes. These are all, I always say when Prabhupada spoke, you listen to him speak. My number one word, there's two words I always say describe Prabhupada when he's giving his classes, his lectures. And the first one is urgency. He speaks with such urgency. It's like he's banging us over the head. Please understand what I'm saying. And the other thing is that love he has. That love he has for Krishna. And because of that love for everyone. And that's also the cause of the urgency. He knew, I'm gone. He would say that from the beginning. I could be gone any day. He would say, I'm an old man. And so he had such urgency to deliver this message. Because he knew he was the one to deliver this message. He always knew that. Prabhupada always understood that. And although he was very, very good at not expressing it in most ways, in just what he said and what he did, and the tone he used, you could understand that. That he couldn't say enough. Like you would say, if he had thousands of mouths, he would have been happier, because then he could have expressed Krishna consciousness so much more to us. As it was, he was frustrated with those limitations. Like he said, I hate going to sleep. It meant he wasn't able to speak, wasn't able to save millions and millions of souls. So that urgency is always there for all of us, whether it's due, whatever it's due to our own bodies, outside forces. We have to take very serious this process, not become complacent in Krishna consciousness. Any other last questions? Thank you very, very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.